to Lee, to the choir, to the children, to Cheryl, for all the amazing folks that helped to pull this together. Let's give them all a big hand. Cheryl, who would have known on Friday night when we were rehearsing, right? So, you know, in almost every church across the country and many across the world, on this day, there are Christmas pageants that are happening. Some are far grander than what we just saw, not necessarily better by any means. In fact, I would doubt there would be any better, but some are big. There's this church that's called the Crystal Cathedral. It's in Southern California, and about 15,000 people go to church there every Sunday. Okay, we have maybe 100 in here today. 15,000, I can't even imagine what that's like. And they have a group of folks who every year, they spend the entire year planning for the one Christmas pageant. And they have details that they have to deal with that you can't even imagine, like camel poop, because they bring camels into the church. And they have lights all over the place and everything else, and they have to make sure that the halos stay on the angels and they don't fall off. And there's all sorts of things in lots of these churches of lots of drama as to who gets to play different roles, like who gets to be Mary, who gets to be the angel who's out in front. And it kind of gets exhausting. And one of the things that I was thinking about, and I wanted to ask you all who are sitting right here with me, so I'm going to sit down for just a minute. So tell me who some of the characters are in the story that we know about the Christmas story. So who are the main characters? Mary, okay. Who else? There's a camel, sure. Yes, Will? With all of its poop, I understand. Yes. We got Jesus in there, right? Will, was that what you were going to say? And a donkey, okay. We've kind of forgotten the dad. Who's the dad? Joseph, thank you. Every now and then, you know, he gets a nod. And then could have been that little drummer boy that was right there, correct? Who's the person that they go to and they knock on the door? And what happens? They knock on the door and say, anybody got any? The innkeeper, right? There's an innkeeper. There's the wise men. They come a little bit later, apparently, but there's a wise man. Who else are there? Sheep, shepherds. Shepherds and their sheep, right? Cows, angels, right? The king that wants to kill the baby Jesus. Yeah, we got all those stories in there. So here's the thing, and I was thinking about this, is that we think about the innkeeper. In fact, if you come to church tomorrow night, we're going to talk a little bit about the innkeeper and the fact that he says, sorry, I have no room for you. And so then Mary and Joseph and Jesus eventually end up where?
In a stable,
right? And we think about, and oftentimes the stable is just kind of the place where they are. And I was thinking about this because in this season of Advent, right, we oftentimes talk about waiting for, preparing for Jesus to come. And I was thinking that perhaps it's also watching for where Jesus is in the most unlikely of places. And I think that there may be some reason why Jesus is in a stable. And it just so happens, so today I introduced my good friends Carolyn and Jack Belsom. I had no idea that they were coming, but I must have known somehow because they have a pet pig. That pet pig's name is Minerva. I utterly love Minerva, and what I was thinking was, yes, that would be what I would say with cows. I utterly love the cow. Thank you, Eden. So I was thinking about this is because I think there's a good reason why when Jesus opens his eyes for the first time and he sees not only mother and father, but he sees these animals because in many ways these animals are the exact presence of Christ that he needs to know. So let me tell you a little bit about Minerva. So Minerva, when my friend Jack and Carolyn got him, they were promised he was a miniature pot-bellied pig that would get to no more than 30 pounds. Minerva now tops out over 300 pounds. 200 pounds? Oh, come on. You've, you put Minerva on a diet from when I last saw him, her. Even if it's 130, which it's not, much bigger than 30 pounds. But Minerva, you would think, as such a big pig, would kind of be a little bit scared to be around. But in fact, Minerva is the kindest, gentlest being you could imagine. Minerva lives outside a lot, but is oftentimes invited into the house. And when Minerva comes into the house, Minerva will sit at your feet. This big, humongous pig sits at your feet and will nuzzle with you and will sort of push you a little bit. And if you happen to have a grape, one of her favorite foods, she will use her snout to make sure that you put the grape into her ever so gentle mouth. And she just sort of opens it up and like says, almost like a baby bird, but without going, ah, instead goes, oh, oh. I would love to bring Minerva here. And here's the thing. When Jesus opens his eyes, if he sees a pig like Minerva, he understands that even though in this world there are big and scary things, we don't really need to be scared of all those big, huge things, because right there is this amazing animal that is there to help him understand what it means to be loved and to be gentled and cared for. I was thinking of another animal. I don't know whether in 2,000 years ago in Palestine whether they had horses. I suspect they didn't, but we know they had donkeys. And I'm wondering, my daughter, Naya, you're here, raise your hand. My daughter, Naya, used to do a lot of horseback riding. And when she was learning how to horseback ride, she ended up on a horse by the name of Major. Major was this amazing horse who was 25, Naya? 22? So Major was 22 years old, had won all sorts of competitions, could jump higher, run faster than almost any horse on the island. But at 22, was slowing down. And if any of you have ridden a horse, you understand that in order to ride a horse well, there's communication that happens between the rider and the horse, right? And it's not your words, is it, Bridget, that you're speaking? It's like the pressure on your legs and your hands and stuff, right? Right, if you look down to it, it's this very subtle communication. And when you're a young person learning how to ride a horse, it can be very difficult to figure out how to do that. Major had been ridden so many times and knew what Major was supposed to do that when a child, like my daughter Naya, or others got on Major's back, instead of being a horse that was scared of this little thing on its back and doing all the wrong signals, Major sort of acted as if, here, let me take you for a ride and let me show you what needs to happen. And so on the very first jump that Naya took on a horse, it was on Major. And it was really, Naya was doing everything that she could to do it right, but it was Major who understood what needed to happen and helped her get over that jump. And when Naya was trying to teach Major how to go a little bit faster and was learning how to squeeze her legs on Major, Major understood, okay, she's not quite telling it to me right, but I understand what's supposed to happen here, and now we're going to go a little bit faster. And when it came time when she's going just a little too fast and maybe Naya wanted to pull a little too hard at first, Major, instead of freaking out, said, I get it. We'll slow down. And so I'm thinking that if Jesus, when he opens his eyes that first day in the stable, and he sees maybe a donkey that's very much like Major, who has this feeling of love for the person that is right there in front of her, and is going to do whatever is necessary to make sure that that child learns how to live and how to signal and communicate with one another, then that's the presence of Christ right there in that wonderful horse. And there's one more I want to tell you about. Do any of you have dogs at home? Dogs, cats? You have a cat? You have a dog? You have a cat? What's your cat's name? Sophie, what's your cat's name? Brutus and Julius Caesar. Et tu, Brute? Your dog sitting, cat sitting, and house sitting, yes? What's that? You have a cat? What's the cat's name? Hermione. Does Hermione have a friend, Harry Potter, or anything like that? Okay, just curious. Yes. What's Hendrix, what's your cat's name? Kiwi? Like the fruit or like the people from Australia? I mean, it's New Zealand, sorry. To all New Zealanders, my apologies. You've got a dog, right? What's the dog's name? Ruby? Beautiful. How many of you have dogs? Raise your hand out here. How many of you had dogs when you were younger? Yeah. So I want to tell you about a really special dog. That dog's name, and you have to forgive me, I may choke up. That dog's name was Keiki. What does Keiki mean? Child, right? We got Keiki when Keiki was a Keiki, and so we just said, well, let's name him Keiki. And Keiki lived with my wife Kirsten and I for a number of years, and then an amazing and wonderful thing happened in our family, and our son Micah was born. Micah is now 26 years old. He's a rather big boy, but when he was born, he wasn't 6 feet tall. He was just this little itty baby that could do nothing but cry and poop and stuff like that, right? And he was this amazing dog that understood without ever having to be told what his role was. Because as soon as Micah came into our family, Keiki adopted him and cared for him and sat at his feet. And when Micah was experimenting with his body, which meant beating on the dog, Keiki would just sort of look at him and say, "It's okay, I understand you mean me no harm," and would do nothing. And wherever Micah was, Keiki would go to take care of him. And I think about the scripture that Uncle Ted read for us earlier. Where is Ted? He's somewhere here. There he is. That Ted read for us earlier, and you think about, so we have the goats that were put on one side, and it's too bad for goats, because goats are really cool, but in this story, they don't fare so well. And Jesus says, you know what, life is not going to be good for you in the future, because when I was hungry, you didn't feed me. When I was thirsty, you didn't give me anything to drink. When I was a stranger, you didn't welcome me. When I was sick, you didn't take care of me. When I was in prison, you didn't visit me. And they looked at him and they said, well, Jesus, when were you all those things? If we had known you were there, we would have taken care of you. After all, you're the Son of God. We're going to do what's right for the Son of God, right? And Jesus says, if you didn't do it for the least of these, those who are lost, last, least, you didn't do it for me. But the sheep, who fare really well in this story, get to go to the other side, and the sheep said, well, we didn't know it was you either. And that's the whole point, is Minerva, Major, Keiki, all these wonderful animals in our life, they somehow know from the very beginning what they're supposed to do. They know to be loving. They know to be caring. They don't look at us to see, are you good looking? Are you rich? Do you have all sorts of toys to play with? They merely understand that you are right here and I need to love you. And for those sheep, that's exactly what they did. They didn't worry whether this was Jesus. They just knew that God says, for those who are the least, those who are the last, those who are the lost, we care for them. So tomorrow is Christmas Eve. The day after is some special day. I don't know what it is. We're in this season of Advent. And during this season of Advent, we oftentimes are saying, let's wait. Let's prepare ourselves. I think it's also a season when we need to be watching for. We need to be looking for where Christ is. And we find Christ in some of the most unlikely of places. We might think we're going to find Christ at the innkeeper who's going to say, come on in. But instead it's in the stable where there might be a pig like Minerva, a donkey like Major, a dog like Keiki, or one of the cats like you all have in your home, that are there to utterly and wonderfully love you. Amen. And thank you, Jack and Carolyn, for being here so that